This is VOA News. I'm Jim Bertel. The United States has urged countries to be diligent in maintaining sanctions on North Korea. At a security conference in Singapore Saturday, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo called on countries to strictly enforce sanctions on the isolated nation.
We expect the Russians and all countries to abide by the U.N. Security Council resolutions and enforce sanctions on North Korea. Any violation that detracts from the world's goal of finally fully denuclearizing North Korea would be something that America would take very seriously.
His remarks follow the release of a United Nations report warning that North Korea has found ways to navigate around the sanctions imposed over the North's nuclear weapons program. VOA's Cindy Sain is traveling with Secretary Pompeo and has more on his meeting with the North Korean delegation.
Secretary Pompeo shook hands with the North Korean Foreign Minister Lee, and a U.S. ambassador handed the North Korean Foreign Minister a letter from President Trump for the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. But afterwards, North Korea's foreign minister gave a statement saying that the country remains firm in its commitment to implementing the agreement made at the summit between Trump and Kim, but he said they were alarmed by some of the rhetoric coming out of the U.S. and its insistence on sanctions. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Jakarta.
Authorities in southern Afghanistan say they have lost contact with scores of soldiers after Taliban insurgents assaulted a military base. A regional Afghan National Army spokesman told VOA heavy fighting erupted following the late Friday insurgent offensive. From Washington, this is VOA News. The World Health Organization says it foresees huge difficulties ahead in efforts to combat the latest Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
WHO's emergency response chief, Peter Salama, says the operation getting underway in North Kivu will be much more difficult and complex than past Ebola response efforts.
On the scale of degree of difficulty, trying to extinguish an outbreak of a deadly high-threat pathogen in a war zone reaches the top of any of our scales.
Ebola is a constant threat in the Democratic Republic of Congo as the virus thrives in heavily forested areas. The newest outbreak is the 10th since the first one was discovered in 1976. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
27 members of Zimbabwe's opposition Movement for Democratic Change Party appeared in court Saturday. They faced public violence charges after six people were killed in post-election protests that were met by a military crackdown. VOA's Steve Miller has more.
The MDC members were arrested on Thursday, August 2nd at the party's headquarters. They were not formally charged by Harare magistrate Francis Vitorini. MDC lawyer Denfort Halimani says the accused remain in custody.
The accused persons have been placed on remand, and the matter has been postponed to Monday for hearing of bail because the state is opposed to their admission to bail on a number of grounds. So we'll be coming back to court on Monday.
Prosecutors said the accused were positively identified by police and that witnesses would testify against them. Their lawyers said the MDC members were innocent and were delivering election results from provinces when arrested. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa has called on the country to unite. Steve Miller, VOA News.
Portugal and Spain have been sweltering under an intense heat wave that has produced near-record temperatures in the southern European countries. AP's Karen Chamis reports.
Portugal has issued red alerts for extreme heat for more than half the country, with thermometers approaching 114.8 degrees. The hot, dry conditions have also led to several wildfires in Portugal. One of the biggest outbreaks in the southern Algarve region has burnt almost 2,500 acres of land. Spain also issued warnings of extreme heat for its southern areas, with temperatures expected to reach 113 degrees in several cities. The hot air mass coming in from Africa is also bringing dust from the Sahara Desert. I'm Karen Chamas.
For all the latest news around the clock, please visit us at voanews.com or check out our mobile app. I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
That once the parties have decided to take different direction, the only good thing then that has happened is that Mnangagwa hasn't galloped towards the quick inauguration. That would have caused a big problem.
Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa calls for unity.
It's right what has been called by Vice President and his United Transformation Movement. It's about who controls the national resources.
Malawian political analysts say there could be an alliance between the ruling party and an opposition group ahead of next year's general election.
President Kagame's involvement in regional politics, in stirring up trouble in all of those countries, there's nothing new. It's the way it is. I don't even think that it will ever change, because as long as it's there.
And there are reports of tension between the governments in Kampala and Kigali. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Newly elected Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa has called on citizens to unite. This after the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission declared him winner of the presidential poll with 50.8% of the total vote count. Nelson Chamisa, leader of the main opposition Movement for Democratic Change, or MDC Alliance, came in second with 44.4% of the vote. But supporters of the opposition party rejected the outcome of the presidential vote, saying it was fraught with irregularities and rigging. It came as the MDC plans to legally challenge the results of the presidential election. For more on the latest political development, I read Rejoice Ngwenya, a Zimbabwean political analyst in the capital, Harare.
The electoral controversy per se is not yet over, because just yesterday I attended the MDC Alliance press conference, and there is a likelihood of litigation. But, Mnangagwa, he has a certain residual sympathy following his successful ouster of Robert Mugabe. So sometimes when he says something, Zimbabweans tend to pick a few positive signals from his statements. And I can assure you that because of this tight contest that he has had with Nelson Chamisa, there is a feeling that he's a bit insecure. So when he talks about, the unity and inviting young people into government and possible meetings with opposition leaders, the people that I speak to tend to buy his story. And I think Zimbabweans are very content that GNU is likely to deliver results.
The MDC Alliance, led by Nelson Chamisa, as you rightly pointed out, is considering going to the court, citing issues they complain about, including voter intimidation, voter irregularities, and rigging, among other things. But realistically, what are the chances of this litigation being successful in Zimbabwe?
Generally, cases of law in Zimbabwe depend on the credibility of the facts on the ground. I know a lot of people have already condemned the judicial as partisan, but if you really look at electoral facts and figures, if somebody is carrying that into court, and given the huge institutional support that Mnangagwa has had, and the various errors, critical errors that were made by the Elections Commission, and reversed results, a judge sitting and listening to a case like this would have had no problems taking a judgment, because this MDC Alliance is not looking for a huge reversal. It's a very slight margin. But I really feel that the judicial system is under pressure to show how credible and non-partisan it is. And I think Nelson Chamisa might have a slight chance in this side of the case.
There are some who suggest that if this election victory of Emmerson Mnangagwa is overturned by the court, that could also plunge the country into tension, chaos, and possible violence.
I don't think so, really. Look, I personally really knew that we would end up in a kind of a tight issue. The worst I would have expected is a runoff And like I said initially, that Emmerson Mnangagwa has set a real, you know, positive tone of reconciliation and stability. And I don't think that even if there was a rerun, we would be looking at a 2008 scenario. I think Zimbabweans generally are more emotionally stable now when it comes to electoral issues. It's unfortunate the incidents that happened after the election, but I don't foresee any tension. For, you know, if anything, there's going to be more tension if this electoral is not resolved sooner than later.
Cyril Ramaphosa, South Africa's president, is calling for all parties to accept the outcome of the election as the Electoral Commission has announced. Do you think this will have any impact on Zimbabweans at all?
Well, to say it will have an impact would be probably an overstatement. I mean, we all know that the SADC All Boys Club, you know, the nationalists, would not come guns blazing, blaming Mnangagwa for stealing an election. I mean, it's inevitable that a neighbor would congratulate you, but if there is a court, if the court overturns, you will simply say, look, we were going by the report of our emissary. But I don't think, you know, Cyril Maposa's, you know, comment will affect the direction of litigation in any way. And it's expected. He's our neighbor, and he is trying to be a gentleman.
So what is your current assessment of the situation in Zimbabwe Saturday today?
Look, when you travel around Harare, you know, things are very calm and stable. But you can sense this palpable anxiety that perhaps the issue is not resolved. You know, people are still a bit tense. People are talking in small groups. They are tense. Business is picking up slowly. But I don't think the atmosphere is as electric as it was in the past few days. And I strongly feel that once the parties have decided to take different direction, the only good thing, James, that has happened is that Mnangagwa hasn't galloped towards a quick inauguration. That would have caused a big problem. So I think these calculated wait until situation they resolve themselves stands has done a lot to try and dignify the situation. But so far, Harare seems to be calm, and the Zimbabweans are getting back to their ways.
Rejoice Ngwenya is a Zimbabwean political analyst. He spoke with me from Harare. Malawian political analyst say it appears the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP, and the opposition United Democratic Front, or UDF, are planning to form an alliance before next year's general election. They also speculated that Atupele Muluzi, a cabinet minister in the current government, who is the leader of the opposition UDF, could be picked to become the vice presidential candidate for incumbent President Mutharika. This after Vice President Silas Chilima resigned from the ruling party, saying corruption in the government has reached embarrassing levels and has since called for an independent inquiry into state institutions. For the latest update, I read Vincent Kondui, a governance consultant and a member of the Political Science Association of Malawi.
Yes, it is quite true that the UDF, which is the United Democratic Front, held a convention. Under that convention, they took well of the Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, one. And currently, the leader of the UDF is the president. He's a minister in the DPP government. So such rumors, yes, have been making rounds, and it's not a surprise. It's a logical conclusion of political knowledge that began in 2014.
The father of Atupele Muluzi is former President Bakili Muluzi. He spoke warmly of President Arthur Mutharika, saying that people should not abuse multi-party democracy and that President Mutharika should be respected. Some people are saying these are strong indications that these two parties will form an alliance, or possibly he could choose Atupele Muluzi as his vice presidential candidate. What is your assessment?
Is that one in the first place? When you look at the UDF, the founding president, Dr. Bakili Muluzi, it is believed that he's the one who has been calling the shots. Though he retired from the presidency in 2009, but still from behind the scenes, he's the one who has been calling the shots. One, he has some corruption cases hanging over his head. He has been prosecuted, has been to the court several times. So in order to cushion himself against the justice system, he has to align himself with the ruling Democratic Progressive Party. And then it is also rumored that the engineering of the of Axel Muzi, who is the president of the UDF, to remain as a minister in the DPP government, again, is to protect his father from prosecution. So his remarks consolidate all these rumors that come 2019, the Democratic Progressive Party and the UDF would go into an electoral alliance and compete in the elections of one bloc. So, yes, I can confirm that such rumors have got very good supporting elements which have been happening since 2013.
Now, I know you are the rally of the new party formed by the Vice President Silas Chilima. Do you think the response or the acceptance of the Vice President as an outsider, although he's part of the government, is forcing the UDF and the DPP to come closer together or work together ahead of next year's election?
You see, when you look at the UDF, Frida is from the southern region of Malawi, and the president, Peter Mutharika, also comes from the southern region of Malawi. However, when you look at the southern region as a whole, these two political parties have got a different support base, but they're both from the southern region. So this could be a way of consolidating the regional politics. Because when you look at the vice president, Klaus Chilima, he is from the central region of Malawi. And in Malawi, regional politics plays a very critical role in electing who becomes the head of state. Now, this is a marriage of convenience between two political parties whose support base is from the same southern region. So they may try to consolidate the electoral base. And you know, when you look at the demographics of Malawi, the southern region has got the highest population. So maybe this could be a way of consolidating the southern region votes so that they go into 2019 elections as one bloc so that they do not split the vote for the southern region. And the secondly, this threat that has been posed by Vice President and his United Transformation Movement is about who controls the national resources. And him being someone from the central region, I strongly believe that there could be well sentiment by the political parties from the southern region to retain the presidency. And in Malawi, he controls the presidency, so controls the national place, controls how development is distributed. So, yes, this is a possibility of a UDF-DPP alliance being threatened by becoming to the political scene as an electoral competitor of the vice president.
Vincent Kondwe is a governance consultant and a member of the Political Science Association of Malawi. He spoke with me from Nzuzu in northern Malawi. There are reports of strained relations between Rwanda and Uganda. The tension between the two neighboring countries has escalated as Kigali accuses Kampala of arbitrarily arresting Rwandans in Uganda. Uganda, on the other hand, has intensified its crackdown on Rwandans, it says, on espionage missions in Uganda. Despite the tension, there are reports of plans to revive the Joint Permanent Commission, or JPC, through which top Rwandan and Ugandan officials regularly meet to straighten out differences that threaten their bilateral ties. David Himbara is a former economic advisor to President Kagame. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in Toronto, Canada, and began by asking him what he made of the Uganda-Rwanda feud.
In my view, it will never end because, you know, this goes back 2000, and now we are in 2018. Off and on. It's personal rivalries between these two men.
According to you, it's a rivalry between the two leaders, not necessarily the people who have very close and historical ties.
Rwanda and Uganda are tied up historically, for all sorts of reasons. Rwandans have historically gone to Uganda to look for work, They've been there as refugees. They went there fleeing religious conflict in Rwanda back in 1920s. Then you have refugees later on in the 60s. Then, of course, you have Bafumbira, who are Ugandans, but Banyarwanda speaking, because of the way the border was drawn. So these two you cannot separate. People are the same. Problem is with politicians.
In Rwanda, there have been some news sites reporting that, alleging that President Museveni has been in contact with you recently, and purportedly he commended you for the work you do and offered his support. First of all, is this true, and what do you make of it?
That's nonsense. Why would President Museveni want to call me, congratulate me for what? They call me dissident. I'm not in any political movement. I'm an academic. Yes, I write. I'm a hard critic of the Kagame regime because of its human rights abuses, the claims that it's developing the country when in fact it's just enriching the ruling party. So there is nothing to congratulate me about or to support me about. I have nothing to be supported about, unless he wants to be my research assistant, which, you know.
Given that the two peoples of the two countries are closely tied, and the leaderships in the two countries have similar ways of governing, how do you see the way forward? How do the two reconcile at the political level?
I don't really think that it's possible to reconcile the two. Let me also put it this way. The problem is not a two-way. The problem is mainly Rwanda. The problem is Rwanda, and it's very obvious for anyone who is interested in looking at this problem. Rwanda has an issue with Burundi and is accused of getting involved in Burundi politics. Rwanda invaded Congo several times. The president of Rwanda said that he would hit Kikwete, the then president Kikwete in Tanzania. So President Kagame's involvement in regional politics, in stirring up trouble in all those countries, there's nothing new. It's the way it is. I don't even think that it will ever change, because as long as he's there.
But there is a serious danger that the tensions could escalate.
Of course, there is always a danger that the situation can escalate. Absolutely. It can escalate because, you see, the movement of the people from Rwanda to Uganda has actually increased because of poverty. So there is this huge movement, people looking for work, and they say they are moving into the forest to clear forest. And then you have politicians that surely putting more fire into this problem. So, of course, it can escalate. People can take advantage of this for their own political end to put more cases into the region. Yeah, absolutely, yes. There is always a problem that this can escalate, yes.
David Himbara is a former economic advisor to President Kagame. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Toronto, Canada. Fighting in the Kasai province of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, has killed up to 5,000 people, displaced 500,000, and sent 30,000 fleeing to neighboring Angola. Human rights observers say crimes against humanity have been committed, while others fear the DRC could be veering toward genocide. VOA's William Eagle takes a closer look at the situation.
The conflict involves the army and two opposing militias, the Kaimuna and Sapu, whose members come largely from the Luba ethnic group, and the Banamura, composed of Chokwe, Pende, and Tetela fighters. Tensions started 2 years ago when the Congolese government overruled the Bahila Kasanga administrative unit over traditional authority in several villages in Kasai Central province. Kinshasa opposed, as customary chief, the naming of a popular Luba, Jean-Prince Pandi. He was suspected of being linked to the country's political opposition. Later, security forces killed Pandi, and in response, his militia, the Kaimuna and Sapu, rapidly expanded their rebellion against the government and its allies. The government's supporters, in turn, formed the Banamura and other militias as the uprising spread to Kasai's other provinces. A United Nations official recently warned the situation is fast approaching the conditions leading up to genocide 20 years ago in the Balkans and in Rwanda. Bakwale Ndiaye disagrees. He leads a team of experts the UN Human Rights Council tasked with investigating the violence in the DRC. He says crimes against humanity have likely been committed, but they do not reach the extremes of Rwanda and the Balkans.
I don't believe that the case can be compared to what is happening now in Kasai. Although there is an instance of ethnic cleansing, we have seen sexual slavery, there have been even some instances of hate media, but not at a level we believe constitute genocide. We don't know what could happen in the future, but for the time being, our investigation did not lead us to this conclusion.
Alan Ngari is a senior researcher with the Transnational Threats and International Crime Division at the Institute of Security Studies in Pretoria, South Africa. He says the definition of genocide includes an intent to wipe out an entire ethnic, national, racial, or religious group. In the DRC, there is not enough evidence to show that intent exists.
Banamura and the government forces erected barriers closer to the villages, and the Luba people were then being targeted and killed. The intent initially was to actually quell the Kaimun and Sapo group, so it wasn't really to exterminate the Luba people, and that's the missing element. And I think this is why the international experts then said there were reasonable grounds to believe that crimes against humanity in the form of persecution happened.
Buck Waleyendai says punishing the guilty will help end the violence. Civilian courts in the DRC are not working, and military courts handle most prosecutions. He calls for more support for the country's courts.
All our archives are in the hands of the High Commissioner, so it is possible to prosecute. It is possible. But once again, there will be never enough courts and enough resources to prosecute thousands of perpetrators. So it should be a kind of prosecution policy, and to select people at a sufficient level of responsibility, no matter who they are, be they from the armed forces, from the militia, Kabina Sapu, or from the Banamura, and make sure that something is done to at least stop impunity.
Ngari and others ask if politics might be part of the government's slow response. Kasai is a stronghold of the opposition, and elections are expected in December.
It almost feels like, you know, let that part of the country fester with its issues, but as long as it can continue to get popular support from other regions, and that is fine, and they will carry through with the elections later this year.
NDI urges a reconciliation process that looks at the root causes of the violence, disarms militias, and reintegrates child soldiers. He also recommends compensation and support to victims of rape, the internally displaced, and those who fled to neighboring countries. Investigations must continue into abuses by all armed forces, including the military. Ngari says Kinshasa must begin talking with its opponents in Kasai. The central government must also take responsibility for mishandling local issues involving customary leaders and introduce ways to resolve disputes without the use of force. I'm William Eagle in Washington.
Has it felt like your week's been dragging and just won't end? Well, guess what? It's finally here, the weekend. And with the weekend, you know it, comes Music Time in Africa. Hey, everybody, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. This week boasts an amazing playlist from Nigeria to Kenya. Song of the Week comes from the Ugandan soul singer Maurice Kiria. And the real showstopper is Cameroon. You'll meet the talented singer-rapper Lady B from Douala.
Lady B sur le mic, dis-moi qui ne connaît pas. Attitude et la vibe qui commet de gros
débats. Four superstars of Khmer pop music, Mr. Leo, Magasco, Minx, and Stanley Anao, live right in the studio.
Et puis même je m'en fous, père le gars.
Do not miss this one. This Sunday and the following Saturday at 15:05 and 20:05 UTC.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the UN Refugee Agency is ramping up life-saving aid to nearly 1 million people displaced by violence in southwestern Ethiopia and is urging accelerated reconciliation efforts to defuse tensions in the region. For the UN, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
As its name implies, the UN Refugee Agency's mandate is to assist and protect refugees. But at the request of the Ethiopian government, it is extending its humanitarian support to include the nearly 1 million Ethiopians internally displaced by intercommunal violence in the Gedeo and West Guji areas. Clashes flared up in April in the border area of the Southern Nations, Nationalities and Peoples region and the Oromia region, following more than a year of crippling drought and tensions over resources. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahecic says the displacement, which peaked in June and July, was prompted by escalating violence and horrific abuse by armed groups. He says women and unaccompanied children are especially traumatized by the experience.
Those who fled described witnessing extreme violence during village raids, including indiscriminate killing, rape, livestock slaughter, and houses being burned to the ground. Most report fleeing with nothing but their lives. Families have been separated, and the overcrowded conditions are leading to serious protection risks.
Mahecic tells VOA that UNHCR has emergency teams on the ground assessing the situation and beefing up the distribution of aid to the displaced. He notes the importance of buttressing the humanitarian operation with government-led reconciliation efforts.
Government-led response needs to focus on reopening a dialogue between these communities who have clashed over the resources, as I said, which came after the very, very long drought and clearly raised tensions among the communities. So the first period will have to be about the confidence building measures and rebuilding trust.
The government of Ethiopia and humanitarian partners are appealing for nearly $118 million to scale up their operations to meet the critical life-saving and protection needs of the displaced. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
I go head over heels for Tina, my cheerleader. She's my diva. She hurt my head, oh mama. It's fused. She hurt my head. Tina, go come and save me, oh, yeah.
Shake your bum bum.
You breaking every man back for the dance floor.
boy, boy.
Cause I'm a fire dancer, number one from Lagos to Uganda. The boy, boy.
Girl, sweet like a vitamin C. Broco, broco, give me energy to sing. Step on your toe. Make sure say you're the one you got, you know, say. Your backside is a bullet full of thunder. Pretty baby, give it to me well. The way you wind, if you make a brother mentor. You got me sing it again. Do you know like, me sense similar. The way you looking is so familiar. Young man, me will like to know ya. And I would you mind if I get your number. Cause if you fire dancer, you breaking every man back for the dance floor. Woy woy.
Cause I'm a fire dancer, number one from the boss to Uganda. Woy woy.
Cause if you fire dancer, you breaking every man back for the dance floor. Woy woy.
Cause I'm a fire dancer, number one from the boss to Uganda. Woy woy. Call me bad man killer. You know me say me sweet like sugar. Anytime you want, I'll give ya. Wine to the tune like a Bible sinner. Oh, the boy I'm out of the place. Call 911. Say me say, oh, it's emergency and turn no day. Watch me bounce to the ting, yo. I know you wanna test this thing, yo. No girl compared to the ting, yo. Nobody can play with the ting, yo. Like you do.
The way you looking is so familiar. Young man, me will like to know ya. And I would you mind if I get your number. Cause if you fire dancer, you breaking every man back to the dance floor. Woy woy.
Cause I'm a fire dancer, number one from the boss to Uganda. Woy woy.
Would you be fire dancer, you breaking every man back to the dance floor. Woy woy.
Cause I'm a fire dancer, number one from the boss to Uganda. Woy woy.
Hear me like, them laughing no see you back to the bone. Got me sing it again. We go like Monday, Tuesday, day and night. Wednesday, Thursday, me got your time. Monday, Tuesday, day and night. No other girl can fit me.
Watch
like
me
that.
Watch me dance to the ting, yeah. I know you wanna test this thing, yeah. No girl compared to the ting, yeah. Nobody can play with the ting, yeah. Like you do. Cause I'm a fire dancer, number one from the boss to Uganda. Woy woy.
Cause if you fire dancer, you breaking every man back to the dance floor. Woy woy.
Cause I'm a fire dancer, number one from the boss to Uganda. Woy woy.
Swings Avenue.
Yeah.
magwa kurumenyo chimani we chanze Allah was telling the girl he want to set up a bande. I know go leave alone tomorrow go make the wedding day. And I will love you from Monday up to Sunday. Yeah, yeah. Señorita, chaka bonita. Let me take you any place I want to go. Baby, if you're ready, come and sit in a baby, man. Girl, I will love you from Monday up to Sunday. Yeah, yeah. Wine just slow, baby drop up a buck, like body to the floor. Now, we love the way you wind down to the ground, yeah. Come closer to Andre now.
Boy, me wanna give you everything. I know the light come take me everything. You're my magic switch. I need emergency. Hurry up, hurry up. I love you, I love you.
Chimanyinga we try.
I call you my baby. Onzi mi amaso. I can see all this.
feeling that ain't over that. In a dance all fest, you're my everything, everything. Come so with the chilo, on bed and tight. Quetaga.
Music from the continent, we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a crazy man can be recognized not by his words, but by his actions. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross and a delegation from the President's Advisory Council on Doing Business in Africa announced over $1 billion in private sector deals during their recent mission to four sub-Saharan African nations. The Advisory Council members expect to quickly conclude more than $2 billion in additional deals in the coming days. The four-nation visit, which included stops in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Cote d'Ivoire, concluded in Ghana, where Secretary Ross signed a memorandum of understanding with the Minister of Finance to deepen the commercial partnership between the two nations. On previous stops, Undersecretary of Commerce Gilbert Kaplan signed a cooperative agreement with the Ethiopian and Kenyan governments. In Ghana, Secretary Ross led the U.S. delegation in meetings with President Nana Akufo-Addo, Vice President Mahmoudou Bawumia, Minister of Trade Alan Karamatin, Minister of Energy Bouaki Agyarko, and Minister of Finance Ken Ofori-Atta. Undersecretary Kaplan led the delegation in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Cote d'Ivoire, meeting with heads of state and senior government officials, including Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta, President Alassane Ouattara, and Prime Minister Amadou Gon Coulibaly of Cote d'Ivoire, and Ethiopian Minister of Finance, Abraham Tekesti. The delegation also met with business leaders and U.S. companies already doing business in those markets. The delegation also met with officials at the African Development Bank to better understand how and where the bank is providing financing throughout the continent. This financing is a key tool for U.S. companies as they seek procurement contracts. Cooperation agreements signed during the trip with Ethiopia, Kenya, and Ghana identify priority projects in key sectors to help achieve long-term growth and development. The cooperation agreements also establish a forum for the governments to address and resolve business climate challenges that limit participation by U.S. companies seeking to invest or do business in the three countries. The United States is making real progress in Africa, and we remain a strong, long-term, and stable partner in the continent's economic development, said Secretary Ross. We are finding solutions to transition aid-based economies to trade-based economies by creating new pathways for mutually beneficial, long-term partnerships.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.